Unmute all the things, and hello, and welcome to the 17th episode of The Lair of Lore, tentatively titled Unearth Kamigawa. I am Steven.
And I'm Miriam.
For a second, I thought you'd accidentally muted or something.
Nope. I'm here. Still here. Haven't gone anywhere.
Well, we are here for what is probably going to be a semi-recurring segment called Unearthed, mostly because it was a wonderful mechanic name, and I don't want it to die. Also because there's literally no... Sorry. Until this morning, there was no story stuff, and I haven't had time to look at the new story stuff. So we're sticking with what we were planning on doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in this case, because Kamigawa is a massive goddamn sinkhole of stories and who else knows what, we're actually just going to grab a couple of characters. Some of the ones we were trying to grab don't work so well because their stories are on the old website and didn't transfer, so they go to 404 links that don't do anything, but we're trying. But basically, we want to grab a couple of people who lived in Kamigawa during the set and talk about what they were doing while they were there.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do at least sort of a brief overview of the entire set story if you don't know. And that's pretty much our game plan for this episode.
It's definitely one of those, like, oh, look at the stuff that's been done in the past.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, since we've been very present-centrically focused.
So, did want to say, very sorry we're late. I am secretly a very, very old man, or I stole one's back, and my back is horribly, horribly screwed up. In fact, the only reason I'm not buckled over in pain right now is because I'm sitting on a heating pad and have taken muscle relaxant and painkillers, so I'm good.
He is good to go.
Yeah, I hurt. I hurt a lot. Oof. But also, I had to take Haley to a thing, which I'll have to go pick her up from, but that shouldn't mess with the show at all. But
no, and especially because this is going to be a shorter episode, as it looked so far.
Probably. The other thing I wanted to mention is I don't know if you're aware yet, but you'll be made aware right now. We totally know that there's apparently a magic official from Wizards story podcast done by Doug Baer, one of the guys who can actually write there.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that today, and I'm like, what?
But it came out today, and
I'm so excited. I'm going to listen when we're done with this.
Yeah, I worked 10-hour shifts and proceeded to come home and take a bunch of meds so that my back would stop hurting. And I don't know what you were doing, but I assume it was not listening to that podcast, so we don't know what it
on my computer for a couple of hours.
Yeah, so we're not talking about it because we don't know what it is. But hey, apparently there is an official Magic story podcast from Wizards of the Coast now.
I'm excited.
The other thing, before I forget, and I'll mention this at the bottom of the show as well, we are going to be changing up our broadcast order next week. This show will be recorded on Thursday because earlier this week it was announced that the Planeshift Kaladesh is coming out next Thursday, the 16th. So we will be recording that day so we can talk about it.
We're excited about.
We don't know what it is. We also don't know where it's coming out. So that'll be fun. The previous two have been posted to entirely different places. One of them, a sort of online magazine that hasn't had an article since October. So who knows where this one will go?
Who knows? I'm just excited that they're actually going to do it.
Yeah.
So
I don't know why they waited so long, but we'll have to find out and see.
Maybe it's going to be super impressive, and we're going to be like, oh my god, of course that was so cool. Or we're going to both hate it, or I'm going to like it, and you're going to be like, meh.
I like how your assumption is that either we both of us love it, or I hate it, and you feel a certain way about, oh shit, did I update this information? But ultimately, I just realized I wasn't sure if I updated our information to be talk shows and the Lair of Lore thing. I hope so. But I love that your first reaction is either everyone loves it or I love it and Steven hates it.
I mean, have you listened to any of our arguments?
Oh, Well, our argument before this show was about whether or not Spider Jerusalem is a good name. Hey, if you want to understand what the hell that is, check out our Patreon where you can get access to the extra bits, which is the stuff we record before and after that has nothing to do with this podcast and is mostly just us talking about work and random stuff.
I think today it was reasons to kill the intern, interesting podcasts, comic books, and what else? I can't think of anything.
Hang on.
But I know last week was us arguing.
Keep running. I'm going to mute real quick because...
So last week's Extra Bits was both of us arguing about how we wanted to do our version of the Kaladesh D&D module, just because we both had ideas, both felt very passionately about said ideas.
See, I feel really bad because I did not feel passionately. I was in incredible pain and could not understand why what I was trying to say was not coming across. It was just like, why is this not working? Communication hard. And I was in pain.
See, I didn't know that you were in, like, your old man back was being a problem, so I probably would have been like, okay.
I don't even know if that was my back. I think it was just, I was in pain and for some reason was being contrarian, if nothing else.
And the thing is, despite me being sweet, occasionally I'm a little sassy.
And despite me being a generally very caring person and actually wanting to make things better, I am a horrible asshole and I can't stop that. I'm sorry.
Hang on just a sec. I'm going to mute myself real quick.
Well, then I will start doing a really, really brief rundown of the story of Kamigawa. So Kamigawa is a really strange plane because we actually came to it mostly because Mirrodin was way too powerful. So this ended up being kind of similar to Scars of Mirrodin. We went over to Innistrad, which was a very heavily story-focused plane where the base cards were not as powerful, but because of that, they ended up spending more time in developing the story and developing the world. So with Kamigawa, we get basically the first test run of that. And one of the first times that Wizards really tried to look at Eastern magic and Eastern philosophies and religions and bring them into magic. So the entire plane is set in sort of a comparison with, like, Sengoku Jidai Japan, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have humans and you have samurai and... very appropriate, and why I actually went with Sengoku Jidai specifically is because you have a bunch of samurai who, on the surface, are samurai and therefore have this whole code of honor thing, but
Bushido.
Almost all of them are backstabbing. Like, the one thing that I highly recommend the folks who do extra credits do a thing called Extra History, and they did, I think their second one was on the Sengoku Jidai period. One of the things that they point out in it was the only people you can trust in this entire period of Japan are the ninjas. Literally no one else is trustworthy. Every samurai ends up stabbing someone who he had sworn a blood oath to, like, their father's graves, ends up stabbing each other in the back. But the ninjas totally fight with you all the way through, even though the only reason they're doing it is because money.
Fair enough. At least you know where their heart is.
That also, don't let monks have guns, because you will not win.
Interesting. What is this called?
It's called Extra History.
Okay. I'll have to check it out.
It's very, 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 very good. I don't actually... cool. I haven't watched in a bit, but that means that they do one episode a week, but they do big, long arches, so if you ignore them for about 2 months, you can come in and see an entire story played out. Yeah, because they've done stuff like the Phoenician War, well, the second and to a lesser extent the third Phoenician War, which are the ones with Carthage and Rome, and they did the South Sea Banking Company fiasco that created a debt in England that England is still paying off now.
This looks awesome.
Yeah, they're all really, really good. Some of them are a little bit...
They're all nice bite-sized pieces, too.
Yeah, some of them are a little bit... Oh, that one got me. There's one specifically that follows a woman whose name I'm not remembering through World War I, where she basically just went and became a nurse that set up a, like, field hospital, sort of, right by one of the battlefields and would treat everybody. And it's one of those, like, oh, because her entire life was not fun or nice or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, eventually, a bunch of the soldiers that she had cared for or, like, carried letters for or things like that found out that she was, like, broke and penniless and living on her own and basically did a massive fun thing to in post-World War I England to, like, support her. It's one of those very hits-you-in-the-feels things.
Oh, God, my heart.
Yeah.
Somehow we got
off the basic idea of Kamigawa, which, again, is magic's first approach at Eastern religions and, not Eastern religions, sorry, at an Eastern setting, specifically Japanese, with a very, very heavy reliance on the traditional views of Shintoism, which is basically the idea that objects, ideas, anything of that sort that people think about enough get a spirit or a kami, that the more important this thing is, the more powerful and large this kami is and the more powerful and such that it is able to be. So it could be something simple as, like, there's kamis of, I don't actually have any of them right here, but there's things where there's, like, a kami of I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this, but basically, like, the candle lighting someone who's reading scrolls into the night. That idea of, like, hard study is emphasized by a spirit being
of this candle. Okay. So I just did a quick search on kami. So there's over 300 different classifications of kami.
For Shintoism, yes.
Yeah,
which is mercifully simpler for Kamigawa. But the basic idea is that the catalyzing event in Kamigawa was essentially these kamis existed on one side of essentially a massive veil that it didn't physically divide the plane of Kamigawa, but there was a spirit world and the mortal world that sort of overlapped each other. And the mortal world's thoughts created the kami, and the kami had something stolen from them. And for a while, we actually didn't know what it was. It was just referred to as that which was taken. Mm-hmm.
And it was taken from Okagachi.
Yes, it was taken from Okagachi, who is the kami of the barrier between the spirit and human world. So he's effectively the king of both.
Yes.
This is one of those things where they didn't put planeswalkers on cards because they were effectively godlike. Okagachi is not on a card. Okagachi, the closest thing he comes to it, I believe, is on Final Judgment, that was it.
Yeah.
Which is, for 4 generic, 2 white, it's a sorcery, remove all creatures from the game, which in modern text is exile all creatures. The Clashing Warriors turn...
Board white.
Yeah. Not even board white, just everything is exiled. They don't even go to the graveyard, they're just gone. The Clashing Warriors turned to face Okagachi, the greatest kami. Their sigh was sigh of awe was their last breath.
Wow. Yeah. Now that paints a picture. That's
so
like the
somebody took something from Okagachi, which resulted in I don't remember what they call the war because I'm not seeing it immediately. My brain wants to say the Kami Human War, but I don't think that's what it is. It's the Kami Something War.
The Kami War. It's just
the Kami War.
Yeah. That which has been taken.
Yeah, that which was taken was taken, and the Kami basically went to war all across Kamigawa against every mortal race. So we got three sets. Champions of Kamigawa, Betrayers of Kamigawa, which, if you can't tell, is literally when some races turned against the mortals. And saviors. Mm-hmm. So the first character that we wanted to look at was one of the few white-aligned villains that we ever saw up until Elish Norn, who probably rules New Phyrexia now, which makes me happy in that horrible little part of my chest that actually likes New Phyrexia because I'm a monster.
Do you want to go ahead and take him then?
I will give a very brief overview, but I think you got a lot more of the research in. So,
I have the research, and then I also found some characters that tie into the story that I think are important.
Okay, well, I'll give a very brief rundown of Conda, and then you can take everything else from there.
Sounds good.
So this one white-aligned villain that we had is Takeshi Conda, although technically pronunciations are a little bit weird. I don't know 100% how it's supposed to be pronounced, and I'm bad at pronouncing Japanese to begin with, so... basically, he was a lord as it before the war began, and he's actually the one who took that which was taken. He built up this massive fortress, and though no one's entirely sure how, he managed to just keep not dying, and effectively, for a while, managed to lead the mortals to almost do well in certain battles. In the Kami War, he lost a lot, but he didn't lose entirely. And if I recall correctly, it turned out the reason why he kept not dying is basically that powerful enough Kami have a thing called a divinity counter, which was a gameplay version of they could basically use it to create some sort of miracle, and if they hadn't used it, they were indestructible. He functionally has the divinity counter of that which was taken.
Yep.
So, do you want to take the rest of it? Because I don't know his story too in-depth.
So, essentially, that which was taken is actually the child of Okagachi. So, that's why it was such a big deal that Konda took her. And I use the word her because eventually... So, here's the part that I think is fantastic in my own small little way. So... one of the main people to take down Takeshi Konda is his own daughter, Michiko Konda, which is kind of awesome. She eventually, when that which was taken was let out through various people stealing the spirit and then eventually letting her out, she bonded with Michiko Konda, and then they formed... the Sisters of Flesh and Spirit, which then take over from Okagachi as the barrier between the mortal and the spirit world. So they're essentially a fusion. And I love that both Okagachi and Konda have been essentially defeated by their own daughters.
Yep.
So that made my heart happy. So yeah, essentially, he's not dead. He is imprisoned in the Jukai Forest, presumably remained ever since, which I was trying to figure out who the Kyodai were. Do you know who that is off your head?
Who is?
I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation. Kyodai, it's K-Y-O-D-A-I.
That is what they named themselves after they combined together.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a spirit entity from Kamigawa, an important part of Okagachi himself, so that which was taken was sort of that which was sort of Okagachi's child. It was also sort of a piece of Okagachi himself.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. Weird. It's like it's almost as if it gained its own sentience.
Sort of, yeah.
Instead of like being, I'm picturing like a flopping limb. All of a sudden becoming sentient.
The best way to think of it is
not what it is, but still. Yeah,
the best way to think of it really is that Okagachi is this larger idea, and that which was taken is a very small, frankly, given what it turned into, probably very idealistic part of that whole idea. And
okay, so it looks like it's... I'm looking at the MTG station page. So apparently it's Okagachi's heart.
Sort of.
His divinity.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, it took his divinity, but what I would probably bet is that it was more of the idea of, instead of... So, Okagachi was the Kami of the barrier.
Yeah.
Instead of the entire barrier, what that which was taken is probably, like, the concept of the need for the barrier, or the ideal reason that the barrier... wouldn't exist, some key concept that is a piece of the greater idea of it, that through the importance that mortals basically put on it, turned into its own massive Kami, and effectively took the job of Okagachi.
Yeah. They destroyed each and every one of Okagachi's heads.
Yeah, because he's a massive serpent thing. Though, we don't know how many heads he actually has, so...
I mean, thankfully, it's not like he's a Hydra or anything, where, like, you chop a head and two more grow back, because that would suck.
Well, he's also a Kami, so the only people who can actually do anything to him are other Kami.
So, yeah, his own flesh.
Yeah.
As it were.
So, Konda physically stole that which was taken. Do they ever actually establish how he did that?
Let me see. It just kind of mentions, Lord Takeshi Konda raided the spirit world. He tore out Okagachi's heart, its divinity, that which gave it purpose and used it to bring glory to his own realm, cast it into the shape of a stone disc, and placed it upon a pedestal. It doesn't really say how he managed to, or at least not in MTG, any of the MTG Salvation pages that I looked at.
Sorry, because one of the issues that we run into here is actually just that a lot of the original stories for these were back on the old, old Wizards website, some of which got moved forward to the old Wizards website, none of which got moved forward to the current one. So if you're ever trying to find any of this stuff, most of what you'll be able to pull up and find will be references to, like, the pre-releases, because for some reason those all made it forward. Fun thing, if you actually want to go look at... I'll see if I can put it in the show notes, but there's a thing for the Magic Online pre-release for Kamigawa. Back when the way that you played Magic Online was you could see people's avatars sitting at a table, and you had to go up and sit at the table to play against them, and that's where the whole Avatars and Vanguards thing came from. You could have some of the characters from this as your physical avatar, but this was also the late 90s... Or, no, this was... This came out in, what, 2005? But Magic Online being not great looked like it was a late 90s computer 3D model.
Okay.
So it looks kind of funny just to see someone who looks kind of like Ink Eyes sitting at a tiny little table waiting for someone who looks kind of like a frogman to come over and play magic with them.
Nice. Okay, so the only thing I could really find out about how he actually, like, broke down the barrier, there's some sort of a sacrilegious ritual, which it doesn't detail, but the key thing that allowed him to do that was the birth of his daughter. Her birth, I guess, released a sort of sympathetic spiritual energy, and that allowed him alongside of...
He had a bunch of support, yeah.
Yeah, like General Takeno, Hisoka of Minamo. So essentially, he and his followers, alongside...
Some of them, like, were followers, a couple of them were sort of representatives of alternate races. Eight and a Half Tails provided his research, Eight and a Half Tails being a Kitsune, who were a white-aligned tribe of fox people, and Meloku, who was a Suratami. They're sort of bunny...
Which is Moonfolk.
Yeah, Moonfolk and Suratami are sort of used interchangeably, depending on whether or not the person who's saying it is Suratami or human. And they're sort of people.
Like Tamiya?
Yeah, Tamiya is Suratami.
Oh, okay.
She's from this plane.
Okay, okay. Yes, I remember that, but she's later.
Oh, yeah, a couple thousand years later.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought.
Actually, it's entirely possible... tens of thousands of years later. There's a weird thing with the timeline. Turns out that this story actually happened way before even the Weatherlight stuff, and that makes everything really confusing.
Okay.
Time is weird in magic.
Yeah. So, apparently it had to do with this ritual, and because the birth of Michiko Konda was such a big deal, like, that's one of the reasons he kind of, like, kept her under lock and key.
Yeah. And effectively, just think about that, his daughter was basically an adult by the time that the war ended, and her birth started it. This war went on forever. There were people
like,
who were born 20
plus years?
I don't know if it was 20, I bet that it was probably at least 16, though. I don't think there's official timeline. Let me just check. Kami War, I had it here somewhere. Nope, there is no... Yep, there is no actual timeline for it.
Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of the basic outline of Takeshi Konda. And I mean, since a lot of those stories have been lost due to like the website switching over.
And the fact that we don't have... I have some of the books, but I think I'm missing the first one in the cycle. So that's...
See, I think my brother had the first one in the cycle when we were kids, but I don't know
you're if cutting, he still hang does. Hang on. You're cutting out a lot. Do you want to do me a favor and check your volume... not volume settings. Your voice settings real quick?
Yeah, sure.
And see that your input sensitivity is set to, like, negative 60 to negative 70? And make sure it's not doing auto, because auto can never be trusted in any program.
How's this?
You have to go through an entire sentence.
Okay, so
don't worry, we'll just see how it goes
from
here.
I think I've got it fixed for now.
Okay.
So do you want to move on to talking about your next favorite person, or do you have any other things to add?
We wanted to talk about Ink Eyes, but Ink Eyes is one of the ones who's lost their story forever. Because it's lost somewhere on the old Magic website. However, we do at least get a little bit of an idea about her from what I've been able to piece together. So Ink Eyes was a Nezumi, one of the Black Aligned tribe for this plane, which were rat people. Basically, their entire thing was largely that they weren't bad people, but because they were rats, they were largely untrusted to begin with. So a lot of them sort of embraced that, and they got a little bit more of a forerunning role in Betrayers of Kamigawa, because a good few of them sided with either the Kami or Ink Eyes, whose full title was Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni, joined with the Oni, who were sort of demon spirits, where the Kami were technically malicious. They were more doing it. They were going to war because it was what their lord demanded and what technically was probably the right thing to do. The Oni were doing it because they enjoyed hurting people, and that's pretty much about it.
The all-consuming Oni of Chaos. Like, I think that's a great name.
Lot of the Oni were pretty good, but
listen to this description. Whereas Okagachi embodied the barrier between mortal and spirit world, the order and the preservation, the all-consuming embodied chaos, decay, hunger, and destruction.
Yet another one that did not get a card because too big, too massive, too powerful.
It would have been broken.
Okay, yeah.
So broken.
I think the reason that they tried to not do a lot of those cards is less that they would be broken and more because they would just be either so over-designed or so oversimplified for what the character is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they've sort of settled on the current design for Planeswalkers, because every single Planeswalker can do more than they're, like, doing when you summon them. The idea and why their resources referred to as loyalty counters is because it's what they have agreed to do for showing up at this time. Like, all of these characters can do significantly more. This is just what they have agreed to do for you for now.
Yes.
And they stay a certain amount of loyal to you, and eventually you can either burn through that loyalty or increase it to insane numbers. Just sort of depends.
Yeah. So. Card would have been cool.
The one thing I did forget about Konda before we get too far away from it, part of the reason why he actually took that which was taken is because, again, he's a white-aligned villain, so as opposed to black-aligned ones whose goal tends to either be entirely selfish or something like greed or whatever, Konda is one of those villains who had maybe not the best intentions, but he had good intentions at heart.
Were originally noble.
Yeah, he took that which was taken, worked with the other, what he would probably consider, like, civilized races of Kamigawa, to theoretically create what almost amounted to a world government that would have been supported by his immortalness, but would still have been supported nonetheless. Theoretically, his idea was to try and make the world better, just through sort of a fascist-y way, with an immortal god king at its head. That's probably the part where his plan falls apart.
You know, Okay, interestingly, you get a little bit more about the ritual when you click on 8.5 Tails.
Yes, because 8.5 Tails did at least some of the research for it.
Yeah, at least that's kind of what it looked like. Apparently he actually, like, had this little moment of, like, well, maybe this isn't the best idea, but then I was like, no, it's fine, it's totally fine. Then when he realized, oh, that was a bad idea, he actually cut off, so he went from 9 Tails to 8.5 Tails.
Yeah. I feel like 8.5 Tails probably would have been 2 colors were he designed with modern story and ideas in mind.
I mean, what colors would you think?
Probably be white and blue because of the whole research idea. The thing is that Kamigawa had, I want to say, 2 multicolored cards. Because it had Iname is one. So in Saviors of Kamigawa, we had Iname life aspect. In Betrayers, we had... Sorry. In Champions, we had Iname life aspect. In Betrayers, we had Iname death aspect. And then in Saviors, we had Iname is one that was both of them together. Mm-hmm. That may actually have been the only multicolored card in this entire set.
Because
this is back when they were very bad at interblock design. Because this... So, first, you had Mirrodin, all artifacts, the first occurrence of equipment. Then you had Kamigawa, monocolored, no artifacts except for a couple pieces of equipment, one of which is massively broken, but that's pretty much it, and a god-awful top that never should have been designed, and spirit mechanics. You know what came after this?
What came after it?
Original Ravnica! The all multicolored set with no spirits.
Okay. I see where they were going with that.
Sorry, let me actually say, in their response, they said, well, there are spirits in Ravnica. There are about 5.
Yeah. So not something you can actually say as, like, these are...
It was actually a cycle, if I recall.
Okay.
There were a couple other spirits in Orzhov, but there was a cycle of monocolored spirits. But it was more just... There was no interblock design, so standard for a couple of years was just, what is any of this? And then this was also back when Extended was a thing. So Extended was some sort of ethereal hellscape covered in, well, basically Affinity and Umizawa's Jite.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. So, sorry, way back to the beginning of this. We were going to try and talk about Ink Eyes, but her one story is...
Lost,
basically. But the basic idea is that she is one of the Nezumi who, I think technically her card is a samurai, right?
I think so. I mean, looking at Ink Eyes, she definitely looks like a samurai.
Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni. Let me look at the card real quick.
Let's see.
No, she's a ninja. Sorry, right. Yes, because Saviors of Kamigawa had the 7 ninjas that were in Magic until they printed 2 more. So
Rat ninja.
Yes, she was a rat ninja. Her story, again, we don't really know what her story was because we can't look it up, but we're led to believe that she was some sort of into some sort of necromantic stuff because that's what most of her card does, and that she is serving the Oni very specifically. So she is definitely on the side of chaotic evil at this point. Chaos and destruction for the sake of chaos and destruction.
Oh, Jesus. And I also remember why I never read the comments.
Well, also because the comments on Ink Eyes are
furry comments.
Some of them are furry comments, but most of them are not. The first one is.
And there's a couple later down that I'm like, and that is why I don't read.
Well, don't worry, the comment system on Gatherer hasn't worked since 2013. This is not a joke.
Oh, good. Okay.
If you don't know what Ink Eyes does, for 4 generic and 2 black, she is a legendary creature rat ninja with ninjutsu of 3 generic and 2 black. Ninjutsu is a mechanic where if a creature would deal combat damage, you can pay this cost, return an unblocked creature, an unblocked attacker you control to your hand. Basically, it's a substitution, it's a swap. If you have an unblocked creature attacking, you swap them out for Ink Eyes, and Ink Eyes is put into play attacking. A lot of the ninjas had, well, all the ninjas had ninjutsu, and a lot of them had what are considered sabotage effects, so effects that go off when they deal combat damage. So whenever Ink Eyes, Servant of Oni, deals combat damage to a player, you may put target creature card from that player's graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. On top of that, she's a 5/4, and she has pay one and a black, regenerate Ink Eyes. Weirdly enough, for the sake of very strange formatting, that's actually what her thing says, is one and a black, regenerate Ink Eyes, not her full name or even this card. Just Ink Eyes. It's just a weird formatting thing.
I don't know. I mean, it's been, what, 10 years? Over 10 years? 12 years now? Yeah. When was she?
Hey, Will.
So, yeah, about 12 years.
Yep. It's been a bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the... It looks like February was when it was released.
For Betrayers, yeah, that would about make sense. February, late January.
So yeah, almost exactly 12 years.
Yep.
So that's cool.
So unfortunately, we don't have a ton about Ink Eyes because, again, her story's gone. However, I was able to grab another one of the Nezumi. Admittedly, this is a very, very small bit of story, so, and I haven't read it yet, but it's only a couple sentences, so I was going to grab... Oh, the best part is this one even cites the article it comes from, but... It goes nowhere. Sorry.
404 error page?
Actually, it does not go to an error page. It goes to the Wizards website that was active from 1995 to 2013 and says, whoop, you just exploded the internet. Well, it's not quite that bad. And claims that the site that's been offline for almost 4 years is down for maintenance, and we apologize for your inconvenience.
It's not coming back.
It's not coming back.
Okay, so who are we talking about? I'm curious.
I was going to talk about... Oh, he doesn't have a card. God damn it, of course he doesn't have a card. Black Nose was a Nezumi ninja, one of the group of wanderers trapped by the Kami in the castle with... I can't pronounce that.
Kami?
Yes, which goes
we'll
to a
that.
Dead link that isn't a thing. The Minamo? What the hell is... Which race is Minamo? Oh, he's a Soratami. Okay. Sorry, Minamo is a school that floats above a waterfall.
It's the monk school, isn't it?
No, it's a Soratami school. It's a magic. Ooh. That's why they're a mage.
This is cool looking. The art's kind of fun.
Basically, Black Nose was one of a group of disparate races and classes, effectively. Basically, it sounds like they trapped a D&D party inside this... castle. In a castle. It's not even a specified castle.
It's just a castle.
And dealing with basically, his entire story was this assorted group of different species and different classes got trapped in a castle and overcame the Kami siege that was waylaying it, and I think I've actually read this story, and I feel like there's a lot of, not racist undertones, but like, I don't like you because you're a rat person, but I'll trust you because you're a ninja and you can go do the ninja thing.
Oh, boo.
I'm oversimplifying it. It wasn't actually that bad, but...
Yeah. It's just like, there was probably like snide remarks made by several characters.
Probably.
Okay.
This was also, I'm willing to bet this was probably the story that was published because it's behind the mask. To reveal the character of Kenshi Sakashima, who is one of the weirdest cards, because his card is Sakashima the Imposter. For 2 generic and 2 blue, he's a legendary creature, human rogue. He's a 3/1, but as Sakashima the Imposter comes into play, you may choose a creature in... let me see if I can read his oracle text instead. You may have Sakashima the Imposter enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except its name is still Sakashima the Imposter. It's legendary in addition to its other types, and it gains pay 2 and 2 blue to return Sakashima the Imposter to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So basically, he's a clone who can copy legendary creatures because he keeps his original name.
Interesting. So during his life, he disguised himself as an ogre, a kitsune, a budoka, samurai, aki, and countless others, even Soratami.
I have no idea what the hell a budoka is. Oh, it's a monk.
It's
just a name for the monks who were green aligned for this plane. They sort of replaced druids.
Okay. So, so the Aki are essentially...
They are goblins,
Goblins?
Yeah. I feel like it's mostly impressive that he could pull off the Aki, because that's also being really short. They're like shin height.
Yeah. Oh, God, who is it that I was looking at? I was clicking around on a couple of the characters. Kikijiki, I think, is an Aki? Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Kikijiki.
There are a lot of Aki that got at least... First of all, it should be said... I think this block has the most legendary creatures of any, because that was the other thing, was they redid the legend rule before going into this set, or this block, and because of that, just sort of ran wild with it. They also did one thing that worked with the new legendary creature rule called the Brothers Yamazaki, who are a really strange freaking card. I hope you can't hear the dog that has just decided to growl behind me. So, Brothers Yamazaki, they actually did two different arts for it. For 2 generic and a red is a legendary creature, human samurai, not shaman. It's a 2/1 with Bushido 1. Whenever this creature blocks or becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn. If there are exactly 2 permanents named Brothers Yamazaki on the battlefield... the quote-unquote legend rule doesn't apply to them. Each other creature named Brothers Yamazaki gets +2/+2 and has haste.
So it looks like there's literally, like, the only difference is their helmets.
I think they're also facing a different direction, aren't they?
Well, they are, but, like, one is holding what looks like a glaive or some sort of halberd because it's got an axe and a spear point on the back of it.
I can only see the one art...
Oh, if you go onto the side, there's 160A and 160B.
Oh.
For printings.
Okay, so...
Yeah, yes, one's got 2 swords, the other's got a spear.
That is
a... And then their helmets are different.
Yeah, that is a...
Is that a halberd?
That is a halberd, and he does have a sword, but it's not drawn. Actually, they both have the same sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have slightly different helmets, but otherwise they're basically the same guys and they're facing back-to-back. But the idea being that you have one brother, you play the second one next turn, they both get +2/+2, and they have haste, so both of them can do stuff this turn.
Okay.
So, they're good cards. They're just funny, because the entire point was, hey, we changed the legend rule? Maybe we should do something with that, since we're calling it the legend rule. Huh. I don't recall them doing anything particularly impressive. They do have a story, but again, the story is lost to time. So, I'm not sure.
I mean, apparently they defeated a crap ton of kami, which is like, yay, good for you.
Well, the issue always with defeating kami is that the entire reason why the mortals weren't winning the war is because you defeat a kami, they just go back to the other side of the veil and come back.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, they can't do it immediately.
Never fell. Like, yeah. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. There were a few places that never fell, but not a lot.
Yeah, so apparently their village is one of those very, very few places that never fell.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of just, like, little side characters, but besides that...
I think we'll probably try and come back next week with more information on a couple more of the bigger side characters. We'll probably do a little bit of coverage on 8.5 Tails and... I'm trying to think of a good Soratami, but again, we'll probably try and grab some of the bigger characters since... Oh, you know who we forgot that we'll do next week for sure. The one black-aligned hero who was the hero through the entire story.
Oh, yeah, what's his face?
Tetsuo Umezawa.
Yeah, Tetsuo Umezawa. That's his face.
Which is also where we got his wonderful... Well, I don't know about wonderful, but the thing that is known as the Fork of Doom... His Jite. Which is okay. basically the original accidental planeswalker. When you read it, it doesn't sound amazing until you realize, you can just keep doing that. Oh god, who designed this? And what it basically came down to was, one, they didn't do testing very much back then, and two, equipment was about a year old, because the first equipment came out in Mirrodin, so they had already had a series of issues with normal artifacts in Mirrodin, so they went, well, the equipment isn't being broken, so we'll make more equipment.
This should be fun.
Yeah, it's a broken thing, and we'll talk about it next week. So,
along with the Kaladesh plane shift.
Yes.
Yay!
So just a reminder that we will be delaying the recording next week by one day, so we will still be doing it live. However, instead of doing it on our normal Wednesday, we will be doing it on Thursday.
Yes.
I don't know what time, because I don't know Miriam's schedule off the top of my head. We will announce it on our
probably
stream.
Probably around the standard time.
Yeah.
Standard time will probably work.
Again, sorry that we did this episode late, but I am a secretly old man and have a really bad back, apparently.
Yeah.
So before we do anything else, I would like to say, just a reminder, please consider checking out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/layeroflore if you liked what you heard here and want to support us. We are currently doing a 365-day streaming challenge, wherein mostly Haley and I are streaming at least once a day for at least, if we can help it, 2 hours, usually more. We have regular shows every Monday. We are running, well, technically Monday and Sunday for right now, we are running Mass Effect Mondays as we try and get through all three of the original Mass Effect games before Andromeda comes out. That might not happen, but I'm going to try, damn it. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we are running the RPG Jamboree, which will probably just be Tales of Zestiria, because when Haley went to start the one yesterday, she accidentally wiped her Final Fantasy XV save.
No!
Yeah, it was fun.
Oh.
Yeah. Wednesdays...
That's rough.
Yeah. Wednesdays, we are doing the Lair of Lore podcast. On Fridays, we are running the Ladies of Lore Dragonsold D&D campaign.
Which you should definitely tune into. It is very fun.
It is a lot of fun. And then Saturdays is sort of our generic bonus stream day. We pretty much do whatever on Earth we feel like, though it might get more structured as the year continues. This is, I want to say, day 20 of the stream marathon, I think.
Yay! I would clap really loud, except it would really blow out the mic. So I'm just going to, like, just gently tap the tips of my fingers together.
Yay!
So you can hear that?
Yes, we can.
Yay!
We...
That's awesome, though.
I can also say for sure that starting sometime between tomorrow, so the 9th, Thursday the 9th, and the 12th, which is Sunday, we will be playing the For Honor open beta. I don't know when exactly that will be. If I could put money on it, I'd probably say Saturday, but we might end up just doing some of it on Thursday. But yeah, all of these are also going to be available on YouTube. If you would like to support us on Patreon, like I said, you get access to the extra bits, which is the stuff before and after every one of these podcasts where we talk about pretty much anything except for the podcast. We also do not self-censor.
Nope, lots of cursing. Lots of cursing happens.
You get access to all of the YouTube videos and the podcast, and you can actually get access to them about 24 to 48-ish hours early, depending on how quickly I move them over. So usually you can get the VODs the day after the stream has happened, and then they'll go live to the public the day after that. We are currently trying to do a couple of different YouTube videos. Specifically, Haley is going to try and start doing a semi-regular... What the hell was that? A semi-regular...
Sorry, that was me, like, bumping against a teacup. That was my bad. Okay. Sorry.
A semi-regular, what's it called?
Let's Cook?
No, Nancy Drew Let's Play. Haley has
pretty much... Oh, she was telling me about that.
That was really loud.
Sorry.
Haley has almost every Nancy Drew game that has ever come out, so that's probably going to be a thing on our channel soon. I am still working on what I'm trying to do as a regular YouTube series. We'll see. Along with the idea of, once again, returning to doing Overwatch and other lore videos. But every YouTube video that we get, if you support us at that level on Patreon, which I think is a fairly low level, I'll go and make sure, but I'm pretty sure it's very low, you get access to earlier than pretty much everyone else, and like I said, you can get access to the extra bits, and the Derpy Puppy feed, which is the sort of series, it's a videos and pictures and pretty much everything of my idiot dogs being idiots, who are now hiding from me, so that's fun.
They're adorable idiots, though.
Up to and including our current attempts to turn the smaller, longer one into a better receiver than everyone on all of the Blood Bowl teams that I have played on so far.
Okay, it's impressive watching him play fetch.
Just see it with a football, it's even better.
Ooh,
The other things we're talking about is probably trying to do, like, Darkest Dungeon, because there's DLC coming out for Darkest Dungeon. Also, there's the Radiant thing, which I haven't tried yet, but oh my god, I love Darkest Dungeon. It's an issue. My dogs are adorable, Gothic. And Gothic is a bad person and got me to sign up for the Humble Monthly Bundle, which came with Total War Warhammer. Never played a Total War game, but it's a Warhammer game that isn't graded down into the dirt, so that makes it better than pretty much every other Warhammer game that's come out in a couple of years. So Sweet. That'll probably be a thing we're going to try as well. There's a lot of things we're going to be trying to work on, and finally, we are working on an original project, which we actually need to look into again, because we have our pilot script done, but we need to check it over before we start recording, but I think y'all will like that as well. So just, we have bigger plans for 2017, which will continue to happen no matter whether or not we actually want them to or not.
It's going to be a big year.
So please consider following us on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. Literally, if you type Layer of Lore into something, it's going to be us. We're on Facebook as Layer of Lore, we're on Twitter as Layer of Lore. Literally, it's at Layer of Lore. You can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/c/Layer of Lore. You can find us on Patreon at Layer of Lore. And you can also find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/Nian713. We couldn't change that one, so we're sticking with it.
It works still.
Yep. And you can find literally 100% of everything that we do, including down to the streams and the stream schedule, all at layerofloor.com. Yes, it is a plan. It's marketing, damn it. Sorry.
We'll get there.
Just talking to the chat. So yes, literally everything is Layer of Lore. Come find us. We do probably more than you think we do. We're stupid like that.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely.
Plus, I have a car again, so I can actually function and move.
Yay!
I have been down a car for a while.
Yeah, probably since, what, January?
It has been almost exactly a month between my previous car being totaled and me finally having a new car.
Well, it's happened. Hooray! It's exciting!
Sorry, it's actually been 3 more days than a month. So, 33 days, basically. So, you wanted to actually, before we signed off, do a very quick, what are we watching, listening to, playing? We had a name for this many, many months ago, but we lost it.
I don't think we had a real name for it. I think it's just, what are we doing? It was, like, literally, like, what you doing type thing.
This was your suggestion, so I assume that you're listening or reading something good.
Oh, you know, just cool podcasts and things like that. Have you ever listened to The Moth Hour?
I barely listen to podcasts anymore, I'll be honest.
Gasp. Okay, well, so this is pretty cool. Lots of stories being told. Yeah, it's pretty damn awesome. Lots of fun stuff. Let's see what else. I finally watched both of the Tron films.
One of them is good. Well, one of them is decent.
One of them is really old.
Yeah, that's the decent one.
I actually didn't mind the Tron Legacy, but I watched it Legacy and then the first Tron film.
Why?
Simply because that was what was suggested to me in the order to sit through them.
By who?
Alex.
He is wrong.
Aw, don't be like that.
No, in this case, he's wrong.
The visuals were like, oh my god, that's a lot of crazy CG.
Yeah, okay,
CG.
The visuals in original Tron are awful.
But if you think about it, it's the first feature-length movie that is pretty much completely CG. So, like, it was pretty groundbreaking for its time.
Yes, which is why it actually didn't win any awards, because it was, they were told that you used computers, you can't win awards for that. I'm not saying that you can't like either one, Will. I'm saying that one of them is objectively a decent movie. The other one is a weird Disney thing that sort of tried to continue a story and didn't do it very well. It's yeah, neither one is bad. It's just
no,
weird.
it wasn't amazing.
Yes, and technically,
I have to admit, the story was better in Tron.
Yeah.
I mean,
sorry, Will is correct. The first entirely CG movie was Toy Story.
Yes.
The first weird CG.
My incorrection.
Yeah, the first weird, not even CG. It was a lot of computer effects blended over human actors. Again, Tron has a weird history behind it. Well, the reason why I have not been listening to podcasts is because Bill and Chewie, through talking about it for literally months, got me listening to the Dresden Files audiobooks, which I'm currently waiting on one of them because, like everyone, I got them through the library. So somehow I have 1 through 9, I'm waiting on 10, and then I have 11 sitting there taunting me.
That sucks.
But they're also very, very good, so I have no problem
with listening. Were you telling me that I needed to listen to these as well?
Yes, I was also saying I would just send them to you, which I still will.
Yes.
And indeed. I'm continuing to be tempted to go find trades of a comic book that Chewie has been recommending, mostly on Twitter, but I think on occasion in a couple other sources, called Transmetropolitan, that is a...
It sounded incredibly relevant when you were talking about it in the pre-show.
That's pretty much why Chewie has been talking about it, because it's massively relevant, because it's basically a gonzo journalist taking down a somehow more subtle version of what our American government has turned into.
Yeah, I mean, also there's a character named Spider Jerusalem, which,
it's the main character.
Which I thought is, like, that's a cool name. That is such a cool name.
Again, just the fact that a comic by Warren Ellis that ran from the late 90s to the early 2000s about what effectively amounts to politics is more subtle than the actual American politics of today is concerning.
Yeah.
Admittedly, the president in these books also didn't have ready access to Twitter and throw tantrums all the time, but...
See, if given the chance to get political on the podcast,
yeah, probably not the best.
Whiny piss baby.
Well, with that, I think we are going to cut this off. Don't worry, we're not cutting the stream, just cutting off the actual episode. Again, thank you very much for listening. Please check us out any of the other places that we are at. You will also, even if you just want to follow us on Facebook or Twitter, you'll get updates whenever we actually post stuff live. If you follow us on YouTube, you can get the video of this. Right now, it's mostly just me, but we will theoretically one day get Miriam back on her freaking camera.
That would be lovely.
I'm going to come to your house and find a way to physically connect you to your modem.
I think it's definitely possible.
Oh, I know it's possible. I'm just saying that I'll have to come to your house and do it. And now I have a car, so I can.
Oof, what a threat.
Okay, well, hang on. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Sounds good.